Okay. Okay, I was actually given a topic tonight to speak about, which I had a good time preparing. I won't mention the person who asked me to speak about it because I don't know if he would want his name mentioned. But I was asked to speak about building self-confidence in yourself. That was the topic. Actually, the topic I was given was self-confidence, but I had to put some adjectives and predicate into the words. I went to a good high school, and can't just give a vod on self-confidence, because self-confidence what? So in my parentheses, how to ruin self-confidence. Self-confidence is the worst thing you could do. It's a very interesting topic, because if you try to look up in Svarim, like what would you look up under self-confidence? What is it? So I was stymied to know what self-confidence is, and I couldn't come up with any easy translation. I did consult with some people who were very erudite, and they didn't know either. I spoke to Ailu Ben, that's the person who I consulted with, and I spoke to two people, Ailu Ben and Matan. And there's no word describes self-confident. It was a godless Adam. I said, if I come in here tonight and give you six shmuzim on godless Adam, I think everyone's going to walk out very disappointed. But it could be if a person worked on the idea of godless Adam, they would feel invigorated, more valued. Well, those things could definitely help. I don't think the etzem, it's... That means self-confidence, I don't know. So I have I worked on this for a couple hours, the last 2 hours. So I have like different thoughts. I wasn't able to put it together in an organized fashion. And some of you who are very organized, if you could put it together in an organized fashion, it probably could be helpful. Maybe you can make like a handout for it. So. Okay, so these ha'aras are all ha'aras on this topic, but they're not necessarily organized in a particular way. So I'll let you organize it. And I ran out of time. Had I had another hour, I would have organized it. But I said, okay, it's time to go. And I was just working on the ha'aras, and I'm going to let you organize it. So this is in the order that I thought of it. So that's an organized way. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought about. Yeah. Okay. There's a book that was written by Rabbi Dr. Twersky called Life's Too Short. And this is the first thing that came to mind. He was working, I read the book a long time ago, but I think I'm remembering this story as it was written there. Daniel, you could correct me if I'm wrong. Daniel read the book. He said he was working like 17, 18 hours a day in some psychotherapy hospital, doing psychotherapy in some hospital, and he was burning out. He was working for months straight, 6 days a week. And this is the famous Rabbi Twersky from Pittsburgh, the one who runs the rehabs and Chashuva Yid. He came and spoke by the Chafetz Chaim conventions years ago, and Yeshiva held to him very much, and Chassidus Yid, and he said over this amazing maisa that's in the book, but it made a very big roshim. He was working, again, these long shifts, 17-hour shifts, for months and months and months and months straight. You know, it's like an extra adder, like you guys are feeling right now. You know, you're going months in Sukkot, months and months and months, and you're trying to make it to Purim, right? An extra month, and he burned out. So for the first time in his life, he was a relatively young man. His mashbi wasn't even married yet, and he went to take his first vacation. first vacation. So he went and he flew somewhere, he checked into a hotel, and he had like a week or 5 days is off. After like 5 or 6 hours, he was going crazy. He couldn't handle it. He was bored, he didn't know what to do. And he came to the realization that he doesn't like himself. Because, you know, when you're with somebody you don't want to be with, you just want to get out of that conversation, you just want to be finished. You end up sitting in the wrong seat by lunch for supper, you're just like, oh. I hope no one has that experience, but like, oh. And you just want to be done with it. A phone conversation, you just get stuck. You're in shul, and you get stuck talking to someone, you don't want to talk to them. Like, he came to the horror realization that the person he's stuck with is himself. And he feared that he was stuck with this person for the rest of his life. He's probably right about that. So, first thing I would like to bring out is that you have to like yourself. Before you try and start liking other people and being this or being confident or being happy and other things I'm going to talk about, you have to like yourself. If you don't like yourself, find out what it is, make a reconciliation, ask mechila, and grant mechila. And if you do that with other people around, you're going to end up in a loony bin, so do it in private. But a person has to like themselves. And there may be parts of us that we don't like. You get past it. Talk it through. Maybe you want to talk it through with somebody. And come to grips with it. Sometimes people, it would be helpful even to speak to someone professionally. If you really don't like yourself, it's okay. Don't be embarrassed. You know, there are a lot of people we don't like. Why can't it be us? I don't think it's so bizarre. You're just being honest. You're just being honest. So what you have to get, but that's one thing you must work on. You need marriage counseling with yourself. And I think that's the first nakuda that came to my mind, is a person has to like themselves. Get to know yourself. Find out what it is you like. Work on the things you don't like. Come to terms with it. Okay, this is what Hashem made me. And now I can move on. And you need to like yourself. You know, it's okay. I get that. Some people a little bit too much like themselves. They're too full of themselves. But I don't mean it to the extreme radical that the person becomes, you know, needs to be institutionalized. I just mean the person has to be able to know that they're okay with themselves. Rabbi Luban gave me this insight. It's not a chazal, but it's a yaivitz, he told me. And he was in the 1700s, and he wrote that one of the problems then in that generation, which was like almost 300 years ago, maybe 250, 300 years ago, is that there's such a thing as false anava. A lot of times that people, I think, could get in the way of self-confidence is an anava, a certain humility which is not real. So the person is trying to be humble, but he's really not being humble. And it gets in the way, that could get in the way of a person's, you know, health, emotional health, to be able to be happy. It's false enough, it's not real. So he's proving anivus, he's proving humility, but it's really not humility. So then what is it? If it's not humility, what is it? If it's not humility, it could be almost anything else, including gaiva. It's pretty funny, the guy thinks he's being an anav, but he's really being a bal gaiva. So I'm not saying it could be anything. So if a person's trying to be humble, feels he wants to be none of that. That's also a good thing to speak it over with somebody. You know, by doing this, such and such a thing, is it proper? I'll give you an example. I know somebody, he will not take an aliyah, I'm sure. Give it to someone else. Now, why is he doing that? So I think if you'd ask him, he thinks he's not worthy. you know, other people deserve it. Let them have the aliyah. He doesn't want to take away from other people. So he, yeah, who am I to say it's not a nivus? But I'm saying maybe it's not a nivus. Maybe it's something else. Maybe he's such a balgaiva that he thinks that if he'll ever mispronounce a word, chas v'shalom, you know, or kiss the Torah the wrong way, or someone will see it, and they're going to make fun of him, and he holds himself to be too great. He doesn't want to see anyone make fun of him. So it could be it's gaiva, not anivus, but it's every time he does it, it could be he makes him feel inadequate. Whereas if you just do it, you wouldn't have that feeling. So a person really has to analyze themselves and see whether or not the anivus that we are proving, that we are demonstrating, sometimes is not anivus. So that could also get in the way.
The danger is that you make yourself feel worse about yourself.
Yeah, he may be thinking, I don't want to take the aliyah, and I'll give it to someone else. So that already makes him feel like he really wants the aliyah, makes him feel bad, but he thinks he's being a nun of, but he's not being a nun of. Could be he's just so conceited and so self-centered that he thinks everyone is going to be analyzing every word he makes, you know, every word he does wrong. And it's not really true. No one's paying attention, even, but he, it could be, I'm just saying it may not be a nivus, so, and that could affect self-confidence. So that was the point that I was trying to make.
He really just thinks that he's a failure?
Could be, yeah. And he may not be a failure, and maybe just, if it's not a nivus, I would tell him to take the aliyah and see that, wow, you made the aliyah. And if you get it wrong the first time, you'll get it right the second time, and then you'll be like everyone else. That'll build your self-confidence.
That a guy might have self-confidence.
Might, yeah. Could be, it really isn't even, so it could be. Okay, I'm sharing some personal insights for myself, despite that it's being recorded. I'm doing Litoelis because I'm saying Litoelis even though I, you know, wouldn't normally talk about myself, but if it'll help people, I decided I'm going to share a few personal things. When I was learning in Kolo, one of my closest friends was asked to take over for one of the rebbeim in Queens who had to be out for a week. I remember why, and he took over the 10th grade. Now, I want to tell you something. When I was in Kolo, when I heard that my friend was taking over the 10th grade, I went over to him, and I said, hey, you may know who it is, Yisachar. How did you bring yourself to walk in front of that class on that first day? I would have taken a shvua d'oraisa that day that I would never be able to have the self-confidence to stand in front of a 10th grade class ever in my life, ever. To the extent I couldn't even believe someone who I knew would be able to do it. I couldn't believe it. I was speechless. I couldn't believe it. How'd you bring yourself to do that? I couldn't be massacred. And it could be some people here are thinking similarly, like you look at other people doing things, you say, well, how will I be able to do that? So I'm not making any other point that I used to feel the exact same way. And I taught 8th grade. I never taught 9th grade. 10th grade. 11th grade, 12th grade, and a mishmash. I taught like every grade. I can't believe it. I don't know how I could stand in front of 9th grade. That may be hard. But I did sub for 9th grade. So I'm just saying that I felt the answer. I couldn't even believe someone else could do it. Okay, people who I didn't know, I know do it. But someone who I knew, I couldn't believe it. Okay, this is getting a little bit more personal, but I'm going to share it. I have a fear every time I have to make an announcement in public. So I get nervous before saying, please be seated. And I can't believe that the Rebbeinu Shlom put me in a position where I have to say, please be seated every day. I have to go through all the rituals of getting past some of the phobias of life to say, please be seated. Everyone seated? Have a great day. Those things, you have to get past certain things. I'm going to get back to that in a second. I have a few suggestions. They say, Kemayim panim al panim, kach lev adam ladam. When people look at you in a certain way, you feel a certain way, and then you look a certain way, and then they feel a certain way. It's hard to know where it starts. But I think it's a very good idea to smile. To smile all times. You should smile all the time. When someone sees you, they should think that something's funny, something's making you happy. It's possible. Aren't there certain people, like you look at the people that see Rabbi Aaron Schechter, you know, he's always smiling. You can't figure out what's he so happy about. He's an old man, he's, you know, 90, and he's got, you know, some health issues, but he's very happy. When people see you happy, they're happy, they smile at you, because you don't see your own smile. They see your smile, then you see them smile, and then you smile. Rabbi Feuerman, Zatzal, when he was here, the very first time he was here, I asked him to give me a temperature reading on if the kids are happy. So he said, yeah, it's very important. The kids have to be happy. Then he sat down with me after he came here and he said, okay, how will we determine if they're happy? He needed to agree with me on the criteria that would be used, because if he comes to me and tells me they're not happy and I disagree with him, then what worth was his visit? Nothing. It would be worthless. So we had to agree on a criteria that we would use to determine whether the guys were happy. You will not believe the criteria we came up with. Would somebody like to make an educated guess on the criteria that we reached? Scientific? Yeah. The suggestion and that we agreed on, we're going to go check and see if the boys are happy, then they'll be smiling. I told him I was not as advanced as Daniil in chinuch issues. You're advanced. But, okay, his father's a mechanic. So, you know, my father was in business, so I didn't have those necessary insights. So I said, well, why would they be smiling in the middle of class? And he told me that when people are happy, they smile. So then I asked him, okay, let's say the class we decide to use is chakras. So he says, yeah, okay, we'll do chakras. So, well, why would they be smiling during chakras? He says, why wouldn't they be smiling during chakras? When people are happy, they smile. Wow, it's amazing, you know? And that's the criteria we used to decide when people are happy. First class we walked into, it's when we had the seventh and eighth grade here. We went into one of the, it was called junior high school, one of the junior high school classes. And we walked out, he says, oh my gosh, you have big problems. You know, but years later he came by and he reminded me, and we went to chakras and he showed me that the boys are much happier. Look, they're all smiling. And I thought, I look now, and you could see the kids are smiling. And not all of them, and not at all the time. But if you want to see if people are happy, they're smiling. It doesn't mean something's hysterically funny, but it could be as hysterically funny. But when people are happy, they smile. So, what do you think mirrors are for? You practice in a mirror. What do I look, what do people, it's good to look in a mirror, not for the wrong reasons, you know, but you look in a mirror to see what do people see when they look at me. That's why you look, remember what a mirror is for. It's not so you should think you're beautiful. So It's so you should see what people are going to see. You want to make sure they see the right thing. So practice. You practice in the mirror. Okay? Again, do this in private. Because if you do it in public, you're going to end up in a loony bin. And don't blame me. Okay, do it in private. People should think that you're smiling at all times. Yes, all times. Even when you're sleeping. No. Even when you're learning, you're eating, you should be smiling. What does your face look like? Are you a happy person? Don't you ever walk by a person and say, well, I'm an angry person. He's like, always got a frown. Then someone tells him, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. What's wrong? You know, you looked a little upset. I say, so if someone says that to you, you say, And people have said that to me. And I said, oh, okay, I guess I have to suck it up and, you know, you don't realize. Because we reflect what's going on in our minds. We don't mean to show ourselves, but if your face gets all contorted and you're like this, you walk out and like someone said, are you okay? I get that a few times. Are you okay? I go, yeah, I really am okay. I have to put myself together again. But it's all mindset. It's very important. When I was in Toro College, Shlita. So I was taking this accounting class. Now, you fellas know, I went to college because my parents weren't, you know, I didn't want to get into an argument with them that I was going to chinuch because everyone thought, you know, if you're going to chinuch, you're not going to make any money. And so I wanted to go, so, okay. I took accounting. So I will get off my case. I have an accounting degree. If I end up a loser, mechanech, I'll go take accounting. Okay. It's good that I didn't become an accountant because I would have shot myself. I can't understand how any person could be an accountant. It doesn't mean that some of your fathers may be accountants. I'm not making fun of them, you know. But I would sooner shoot myself. Okay, personally. Why I took accounting? Because I was too stupid to go to some career counselor to find out what I shouldn't do. So they probably would have told me, stay away from accounting. But anyway, so I think I didn't know anything about accounting. I was doing it just to get the degree. And, you know, I probably hated every minute of every class I ever took. I just wanted to be good. It was the best degree to get because you don't need graduates. Those days, you didn't need graduate school. You take accounting, get your CPA, and you're an accountant. No more school. Ah, Kavaldik, no more school. That's what I wanted, no more school. So I took accounting, okay? In one of my last classes, I was in the advanced accounting class, and the professor, who was a, it's Toro College, who was a, you know, making a lot of money in accounting, and he was a Gera Chassid, and American, spoke perfect English. He was going around the class of 40 guys, and he said, you know, the big eight firms, that, I don't know how many there are now, but then there were the big eight, four? Oh my gosh, we lost four. So the big eight, top eight, I think they called it the big eight back then. And he said that, you know, after a few years, you can apply and get into the big eight. That's where to go. From this class, he goes up and down the rows. Yeah, there are two of you could probably get a job at the Big Eight now. He points to one guy over there, then he points to me. Now, Big Eight firms in 1985, like April 85, they were making in the mid hundreds, 150 something. 1985, imagine by now I'd be a rich man. I would have been rich in 1985. And so I said, wow, this Gera Chassid was the head of the accounting department at Toro College. He was the head of the department. And I didn't know anything about accounting. So I said, are you mixing me up with somebody else? He said, no, Palgon. I said, yeah. So I said, why would they hire me? Now here, I had no idea. I wouldn't even apply to Big Eight. I'd have probably gone to some, you know, yeshiva office and say, you know, you need anyone to help with arithmetic. Why did they hire me? So I'm not such a good accountant, the Lashon Saginar. I don't know any accounting. So he said, because they want people who are going to bring in the big customers. And you know how to talk to people, and have all these parties, and you'll be there, and they'll introduce you as the, you know, either accounting executive from some big firm, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I want to be with that guy. And that's why they would hire me. I said, what? They're hiring me for my looks? I go to a big firm. That's ridiculous. The whole thing was like one big sheker. He didn't care that I didn't know anything about accounting. So what's good to know is that you can get very far in life just by being happy, putting on a smile, backslap the guy and chum with them, and people ready to hire you in the Big Eight. You think the Big Eight, you know, the top firm, you know, there are some law firms that the people are making $700-$800 an hour. There are some now making over $1,000 an hour, okay? And the guy could have flunked out and get straight D minuses in every law class, but he's there because at every party, this guy's a party animal, he's there, you know, whooping it up with all the potential customers, and they just want to be with him, okay? And don't think there aren't doctors like that also. There are doctors, you know, you can say they have great bedside manner. They get all the customers, all the patients, because they love this doctor. Oh, my doctor is so good. But you got to find out. He may have gotten a D minus in every single surgical procedure that he ever did. Another idea that I think is very helpful is admit mistakes. If you make a mistake, just own it. Most people who complain, they make as many mistakes as you do. If you mess up, just say so. People like it. They'll it takes certain confidence, but like if you start trying to emulate the person who you want to be like when you call a company to complain about their product, you just want them to give you your money back or tell you ever now just come order anything from Amazon for the rest of your life. You know, you just want, but once the person tells you like, oh, I see we really messed up. Let me speak to someone. I'll get back to you. I'm so sorry that happened. I feel terrible. Let me get back to you. You know, then already the persona already relaxes people. So you may not feel that self-confidence. I'll tell you a maisa that happened to me. I was in camp for the summer, and we got a phone line. And one summer we got the bill. At the end of the summer, it was like for $800. Something must be wrong. It must be a joke. Because it's usually like $22. And now it's like $700, $800. So what happened? So my wife takes care of these issues, and she called, I don't know if it was Verizon or AT&T, and they said, oh, you know, we said the last three summers was $22. I'm only there for a month. And why was it $700, $800? Says, oh, you didn't sign up for the special plan. You got the standard plan. And I said, standard plan is what? Standard plan is $2.20 a minute for long distance phone calls. I said, what? I said, why did you sign me up for the standard plan if every other year I didn't have that plan? I said, well, if you don't sign up for it, we just give you the standard plan. I said, so 1 second. So once my wife was done, so you really thought, since you didn't know what I wanted, should I pay $22 or $700? You signed me up for the $700 plan, not knowing what I wanted. So So my wife was fighting with them, and then she got too upset and too stressed out, so she left it. And she called again in November, and then in April, and then in June. And then we tried getting a phone the next summer, and they wouldn't give us a phone because we didn't pay our bill. So it was still $700 outstanding. So I didn't want to get involved. I'm too busy. And so but I saw my wife was getting really upset about it, so I said, okay, I'll make the phone call. I'll make this phone call. I called up, and I said to the person, I don't know if you could help me. Boy, did I mess up. What's wrong? What's wrong? Said, I doubt you could help me. I got this bill for $700 last summer. It's usually $22, but can you imagine that I didn't sign up for the special plan? And my wife is so angry at me. We used up all of our vacation money. And I don't know what to do. I'm calling only to see if you could help. Well, I can help you. I didn't think so. But maybe I can get a supervisor for you. She's getting me a supervisor. So supervisor gets on. Yes, sir, can I help you? I said, I don't think so. Boy, did I mess up. I said, it says right here in the fine print on page 219 that if you don't sign up for the regular plan, they're going to give you this, you know, the special plan, you can give you a standard plan. And it said it there. I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe you could advise me. First, I don't have the money, and my wife is so angry at me. And, well, that seems to be a pretty reasonable mistake. I'll take care of that for you right now. Just pay the $22.80, and we're good to go. I said, really? You wouldn't be able to hook me up now with a phone now. That usually takes a month in advance, but they wouldn't do it for me. Well, I could expedite that since it was really an error, a mistake, and I'll take care of that now. And you tell your wife that she'll have service tomorrow. Just send her the check for $22. I said, okay. And my wife got even more angry at me. Why did you do this a year ago? I called 5 times and finally I was crying at the end of the phone call. You know, there was sometimes, you know, I was petrified before I made that phone call. But you need to, so to speak, do what you gotta do. People they love when you mess up. They love it. They love when you mess up. You just think about it. Kid gets called into the principal's office. I would advise every kid, no high school kids are there. Okay, you tell the kid, just, you know, if you messed up, stop making all these excuses. The only thing you could do wrong is defend yourself. This is not the court. In court, you have to defend yourself. Okay, they don't care if they like you or not like you. You're guilty or innocent, but it's not a courtroom. So if you do something, just own it. Just take responsibility for it. That's all people want to see. And you take responsibility for it. So all I did was I took responsibility. I didn't want to blame them. Well, I was blaming them. And I feel that also when you act in a certain way, you take responsibility, people embrace it. They have more respect for you. You have to, you know, I don't know if I did right or wrong, but sometimes people complain to the principal or a yeshiva about staff members in the yeshiva. So it gets a little touchy because you want to be able to, you want to throw anyone under the bus behind their back. So I don't do that. And there are different ways of doing it. I'm probably a little bit more lenient in this way. I hope I do the right thing. But I always tell them that I you know, if that's what happened, I wouldn't agree with that. Let me go follow up and I'll speak to the person and get back to you. Yeah, I agree with you. That would not be appropriate. Now I tell them that I didn't know. I can't take their word for it because maybe that's not what happened. Sometimes you have me kutzer, you know, of what you think happened. It happens all the time, every single day. But you know what happened recently? Is a crazy story. One person said the Rebbe said he'll take care of the kid if he asks me, like a mensch. And the Rebbe came special to the yeshiva just to give the kid a chance to ask. The kid had to ask. And so I'm walking home, on a Sunday afternoon. I was walking with one of you guys on a Sunday afternoon. I stopped. I think I told someone part of the story. I don't say if you know any more details. And when I'm walking, I get a phone call. I stop because this way the person walking me doesn't lose any time. That's what I do. So I stop. And the Rebbe calls me and says, "What do you want me to do? You know, I came. I walked up and past the guy five times, you know, just like this, and, you know, he didn't ask me anything. How much longer do you want me to stay around?" I asked the Rebbe to please give him a chance to Sunday to ask you what he needed. Okay, how much you want me to send away? As I'm thinking, I get a phone call from the kid. So I said, "Hold on 1 second." The kid gets on and goes, "You told me to ask the Rebbe, and I asked him, and he walked right by me. And I have witnesses." He goes, "Hold on 1 second." I go, "Rebbe, what happened?" "He walked by?" "Yeah, he walked right by me." I go back to the other kid. "Tell me again, what happened?" Because I went and I asked him. I said, "You sure he heard?" "Yes, everyone heard." Now, there's two stories, Rikotze El Kotze. Okay, in this case, I personally, in my mind, I give the Rebbe the benefit of the doubt, of course, but I called the kid. I said, "You know, I think you should try again, because I think it's better for the doubt. Maybe he didn't hear you. There's no way he didn't hear you. So why don't you go ask him again? I'll bet you, if you go and sit down with him and say, 'Man, I'm sure it's going to work out. I'll place my reputation on it.'" I go back to the Rebbe. "He'll be right over." Okay, it was settled in the next 5 minutes, so you have to know. You know, sometimes there are different versions of the story.
All right, how does humble self-confidence?
Huh?
Is this something which takes self-confidence to do? To admit mistakes?
Okay, I'm trying to remember. I started mentioning something and realized that there's two sides to the story, but I don't remember how I got into that. The story was a peerish on something I said right before that. Listen to the tape. Okay.
So it's the topic of admitting mistakes.
Yeah.
That helps you gain self-confidence?
Oh, the topic of admitting mistakes, yeah. It exudes something, confidence. Because it takes a man to admit a mistake, and people are scared to admit their mistakes. So, but if you made a mistake, do it anyway. If you made the mistake, admit it, even if you're scared to. Own it. Own the problem. It gives people have confidence in you. And a male, when they have confidence in you, you're going to feel like, wow, they have confidence in me, and you'll start feeling it.
Is that like a chitzonis more of a premium step?
We can hack this out. We can hack it out at any point over here. I'm open for all of them. My wife thought the vod tonight was a chinuch vod, so she put out the candies on her dining room table. Then around 9:40, I said, "Oh, it's yeshiva. So I owe you one." So we can hack it. We're ready for another one. Bal Harbor is over, so we have a chinuch vod.
The candy's still out?
Yeah. It's still there. I was thinking that the shmooze that I said on Shabbos, that, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu had a little chalish sadas. That chazal I had said once before, I think in 2008, I had it in my notes. I said this shmooze in 2008, a totally different point, that Moshe Rabbeinu had chalish sadas, like he was passed over. Like he felt a little bit like, "What? They're not giving me the Kohen Gadol?" Now it's a different point. Not that he didn't appreciate Torah, but like, you know, we sometimes have disappointments, and it throws us, you know, and we get all insecure, and we start getting down on ourselves. But there are often very, very good explanations. So don't jump to conclusions. I have another idea over here. You should write this down. This helped me very much. You should hang around confident, happy, positive, honest people. Like the person who you feel that you appreciate, that's who you should be, if you can, unless the guy doesn't want anything to do with you. But hang around those kind of people, because it rubs off. you'd be surprised how certain behaviors have a lot to do with how we act. This one, actually, I saw in a book. You gotta get past your fears. I was speaking to a psychologist from in camp I got used to dealing with a lot of homesick kids. So homesick age, perfect age, usually around 10, 11 years old. The little kids don't get homesick. Like the 7-year-olds don't get homesick much. It looks like from all my years in camp, it's a little bit of an older kid that gets homesick. Like the little kids are too little to get homesick. It's the ones who are shtickle, like a little maturing, like almost 10, 11 years old. In my experience, it seems that those kids get more homesick. We had a situation where, oh gosh, what are we doing about Marv?
Wait, we are the minion.
Does somebody want to see if they have a minion there?
So we're going to call Rabbi Shaffer?
Can you call Rabbi Shaffer and tell him to daven?
No,
Okay, here we do. I feel like I miss in the morning. Okay, hold on.
Kaitovsky is speaking after my
Uh-oh.
There's supposed to be a speech after.
Oh, so maybe we should stop. So maybe we'll have, I know where I'm up to. So maybe we should do part B on a different Rabbi Akir. We're 40% finished, but Rabbi Kaitovsky's here. So I think we should stop now, and we'll schedule Vlad for the next opportunity. Right here, makes the schedule. The next schedule will have a part B. Okay, fine. Okay, part B next time.